So last time we started sort of talking in earnest about this idea of congestion control, that we learned about this sliding window idea that lets us decide how much to send for a connection over the network. And we learned that there's kind of an optimal value there, that if we send too much, then things perform horribly because we have too much stuff for the network to handle, and it's going to drop some of the stuff we're sending. We're going to have to retransmit it. That's just going to be wasted effort. It's also going to increase our latency because we're going to have queues that fill up. And if we send too little, well, we're just not using some of the capacity of the network. And kind of ideally, we'd say, okay, maybe the network could tell us directly, you know, hey, this is what your window size should be. But that's typically not a thing that's going to happen on the networks we're interested in. Things like the internet. And kind of a reason for that is just the scalability one, that the switches and routers on the network don't actually know anything, and it's kind of important that they don't need to know about all the connections that are going through them. So what we do is sort of probe the network performance and see, okay, am I in this too low region or this too high region? And we try to adjust our window size based on that. And we learned that it's not going to be good enough for us to just figure out the window size and then continue using that for the rest of our connection, because it's going to vary what the optimal window size is, because it's affected by who else is using the network alongside us. So this is going to be a continuous process that we do. And kind of the strategy we arose on was this additive increase, multiplicative decrease, that we're going to add to our window size kind of by a fixed amount every time unit. And our time unit was basically a round trip time. And we're going to decrease by this multiplicative amount, typically halving, but we could choose something else maybe. Something else is probably actually better. But by some multiplicative amount, when we have a congestion loss, a signal that we're in the too high region. And we also mentioned there's some variations on this. So one variation we talked about was Cubic, which is the most popular congestion control for like laptops and desktops these days. It does something where it increases in a curve that's shaped like a cubic function rather than our additive increase, which is kind of just linear. And the motivation there was, well, additive increase turns out, you know, it worked great on the early internet, well, kind of great, but when we have lots of bandwidth, adding little bits at a time doesn't get you to the full capacity all the time, and we don't want to just add, you know, multiply how much we add by 10, because that's going to be really bad for low bandwidth links. We still want to handle those. And so Cubic takes this compromise where they say, we're going to kind of guess that where we last had a loss is the right point, and we should probe more slowly around that size, because probably we'll figure out the exact place where the capacity of the network is around there. But, you know, if we get far away from that and the network's still working, or we're way below that and the network's still working, probably that means we have a while to go before we're going to hit the capacity. So the intuition is we want to have this faster increase away from that. And they modeled that with a cubic function. And so we have this, and we have the multiplicative decrease, and we learned that there's this kind of nice theoretical argument that we had this kind of 2D model where we sort of plotted our bandwidth of two flows as a point in 2D space, and we learned that additive increase kind of increases us at a 45 degree angle, and multiplicative decrease kind of gets us closer to the origin. And this results in us kind of naturally ending up at the place where we fairly share the network and try to use basically all the capacity of the network with two flows, and I asserted without proof that the same argument works in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 dimensions, though I obviously didn't draw those pictures because I'm not very good at drawing, you know, 4 or 5 dimensional graphs. So questions about these things we covered last time? Okay, so separately from that, we have some assignments that are out, and I would like to spend some class time to answer any common questions about the assignments. So we have kind of reliable 2, which is our actually implementing the sliding window, which I think people have found is a lot trickier than reliable 1, just because there's a lot more sort of corner cases you can run into. And upcoming next week, we have our sort of Mac learning with P4 assignment. And with reliable 2, I had some people in office hours, so I can talk about like things I've noticed come up in that assignment. And sort of something, I think that the biggest thing that people have trouble with is, you know, handling getting ACK2, then ACK4, and that type of scenario. If you get, you can have your ACK skip 1 because you lost an ACK due to a drop packet loss. And you need to handle that by realizing the ACK4 means I need to do what I would do for ACK3 and ACK4 right now. So if you forget to increase your timer or you consider that out of bounds, that's kind of a common mistake that you can easily make. And it's very subtle because, well, when you're testing it, not only does it only happen if you sort of told the simulator to drop packets, it only happens very occasionally when you have packets dropped, like not consistently all the time. The other thing I mentioned on this assignment is that TCP, the sequence number wraparound has been tricky for some people. Initially, my autograder, set the maximum sequence number, but it didn't check your sequence numbers were below the maximum. It now does that, and I emailed one person who had results that gave a yes when it shouldn't have for that, but I think there was only one, or only two, one person I talked to in person in office hours, and one person I emailed. But this is, I think, another place where people have trouble because it happens, especially because you have to deal with cases where say our max sequence number is, you get the ACK for the max, and then the ACK for 1, what should you do in that case? Probably you should acknowledge 0 and 1. You should handle that as it being 0 and 1. It's the same situation as before, but with the wraparound scenario. And you need to do the bookkeeping to realize our window sort of includes like the maximum number 0, 1, 2, not just the maximum number. And that means you're going to need to do something other than just subtracting to handle that case. So any questions on assignments while we're online? Yes?
What are the conditions for the simulator to terminate?
So the simulator is what's known as a discrete event simulation. So it has a priority queue of events, sort of where the priority is the time. And when there are no more events in the queue, it terminates. So if it's not terminating for you, a common cause of that is that if you have a timeout that keeps going, if you keep having a timeout to do something, even though there's no reason to do that, it will just go on forever. Does that answer your question? Yeah, and I would say, like, as far as like what people really do in research, a discrete event simulator of this sort is like the most common strategy. It's like, they're not actually that hard to write because they're a priority queue. And there's a loop which is get the thing off the priority queue, simulate that event, where that event is like call one of our functions. And that's what the simulator is doing. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
Is it all autograder? Is there any
manual grader? Is it all autograder? I am intending to do all autograder. If you think the autograder screwed up, I will do manual grading. And when the autograder screws up in your favor, I don't think I can get away with like telling you, sorry, you thought you were done, you're not. I'm not going to do that. But I would like to know if it screwed up because I might teach this course. Does that answer your question? Yeah, I guess that would say that's for reliable too. For the before assignment, that is going to be all manual graded. And one of the things we ask you to submit is like a document describing how you prove to yourself it works. And that's probably what we'll be looking at instead of running your code. So like what test did you run for yourself? Other questions? Okay. So let's go back to where we were last time. So last time we finished off by saying that, we have our AMD in fact does the right thing in some cases which aren't kind of the most obvious. And the case we gave was that we have flow 2 that has a slower bottleneck link, but still shares a link with flow 1. And we showed that, what should happen kind of in the sort of steady state is that we'll end up that flow 2 uses as much bandwidth as it can, and flow 1 gets the rest. It's not the case that flow 1 sort of totally dominates flow 2 and deprives it of all its bandwidth. It still gets to use as much as its bottleneck lets it. And this is generally sort of the equilibrium that this congestion control gets us at. And I asserted sort of kind of relatively informally that this is the fairest allocation we can do with that. And let's talk a little about what fairness means, because this comes up a bunch in evaluating congestion control with multiple flows, and it comes up in other networking contexts. We're going to want to say, we have multiple people using a network. Is the network actually dividing up the resources fairly among them? And this also applies to some other contexts. So like if you're doing operating systems, same things apply. As far as like, is every program getting the same right amount of CPU? Same idea. And a problem with fairness that we have in this scenario is that there's some obviously fair allocations that we can consider that like maybe aren't so great. So in this scenario, if I draw the sort of equal bandwidth line, this point is fair, right? It's intuitively fair, but it's maybe not the point we want to talk about, right? Because it's not what we want our network to actually do. We don't want to say, sorry, flow one, you can't use all the bandwidth that's available. We're just going to leave it unused just so you don't do better than flow 2. We don't want that to happen. But we want to somehow say that we're doing the fairest thing, even though we know that it's not going to be equal. We could make it equal, but that's just inefficient. So how can we define what's fair in a way where we don't say that you have to go to that blue point, that exactly even point in this scenario where we know that we can do something that's more efficient without hurting anyone. And the definition that's going to get us there is something known as min-max fairness. And basically the intuition is we're going to look for someone who is starved and we're going to say that our allocation is fair if we can't give anyone more bandwidth without hurting someone who's all started worse off. It's okay if we hurt someone who started better off, because that's getting us closer to equal, but we can't help anyone get us closer to equal you know, get one person more bandwidth without getting someone else who already had less, even less. So we're hurting, you know, basically we're hurting the people who were poor, we're going to make some poor people even poorer no matter what we do. If that's the case, if we can't add to anyone's bandwidth without hurting someone who is raw, and if we think of how that applies here, so I asserted that this point was fair, and if we think about, okay, who can we add bandwidth to, and who's that going to hurt? So I can't add bandwidth to flow 2. I just can't, right? If I try to, there's just no way of doing that, so I can't consider that. If I add bandwidth to flow 1, we're going to end up somewhere over here, and any way I add bandwidth to flow 1 is going to hurt flow 2. Flow 2 is already doing worse than flow 1. This is making things less fair. And so I can say that, you know, that's going to make things less fair. And since any way of adding bandwidth to either flow would either do nothing, we can't do it, or would make it less fair, this is the most fair configuration. And this definition, we can extend it to more than 2 flows and still get that idea, and it still accounts for, you know, that we're going to have real scenarios where we can't just say the most fair allocation, the best fair allocation is the one where everything's even. Or, you know, we could probably do that. Well, we can always do that. But it's not always an interesting allocation. And if you want to say, can we always do that? The proof we can always do that is I have a fair allocation that always works. It's give everyone no bandwidth. Always fair. Just not very exciting. And people might complain if you are a network administrator and that's how you decide to make things fair. So we have this definition, let's apply this. So we have our slow link, and let's say the slow link has a capacity of 5 megabits bytes a second, and all the other links are 20 megabytes a second. And so we have these 2 dotted flows, dashed or dotted flows, and the solid flow that are sharing this bottleneck link, and this is going to be the most constraining thing. And my question is, you know, what if these allocations I have down here are fair or unfair? And why? Like, what's our proof that these are not fair or are fair? So I'll give you a minute to consider that. Yeah.
For the first one, you can add to a flow without hurting anybody because you're not maximizing the flow across capacity. If you add speed to the solid line, nobody would be hurt by that.
So you made an observation that there's a problem here in the first one that we can add here. So that's one thing that's wrong. There's some other things that are wrong too, but one thing that's wrong is that I can just replace this with 15 and it still works. So this might meet our fairness definition, but it's inefficient and we kind of have free extra efficiency there. So there's some other things going on where we can argue that we can increase the fairness. Yeah.
Dotted and dashed line. I don't think there's a reason for them to be different. Like, one using more than the other.
Okay. So your intuition is that the dotted and the dashed are red dotted and are purple dashed. I'm sorry, I should have chosen something more distinct. But should have the same bandwidth. So how can we say that with kind of our definition of fairness? Like, what is that? How do we apply our idea about hurting other flows, you know, increasing the allocation without hurting someone else? Like, how does that apply in this case? Right, because we want to apply our definition. We don't just intuitively, yeah, it seems wrong, right? Their scenarios are equal, they should have equal bandwidth. That's the intuition. How does our definition reflect that? The idea, I told you that. Yeah.
Well, there is a way to add flow to a slower array, like, without hurting one that is slower in that way. Without hurting one that is slower, right? You can add flow to the dotted link and only hurt the dashed link, which has more flow than the dotted link. Therefore, it's okay.
Yeah. So our argument is we're going to add to the lowest to the dotted link. So I can increase this to say, just for argument, I'll just do 2.1, right? We know it actually wants to be 2.5, but for just proving it's unfair, all I need to say is we can increase it a little bit. And I need to get that extra 0.1 from somewhere, and I look at this link here, and I find out that when I increase this to 2.1, I'm using 2.1 plus 3. That doesn't work, so let's just decrease this 3 to 2.9. And that's acceptable under our definition because we're hurting Flow with more bandwidth already. We're not hurting someone who's poorer than us. We're hurting someone who's richer already. That is still fair to do. And so this says that, this adjustment here, where I added 0.1 to the dotted and subtracted 0.1 from the dash to make it so that fits on our slow link, that made things more fair. Therefore, this is an unfair allocation. Questions about the logic there and how it fits with our sort of min-max fairness definition? Okay, so let's apply this to the next case, the solid 16 megabyte 2 and 2. So this one isn't inefficient because we are fully utilizing the bottleneck link, namely the link that all three flows are on. Is it, what's our argument that it is either fair or unfair? Yeah.
I would say it's unfair because it's not using the full capacity of the slow link. So you could increase either the dotted or the dashed lines and increase the solid ones, since the solid has more bandwidth.
Yeah, so your observation is that we can increase either of the solid dotted or the dashed, that's fine. And well, if we do that, we're going to exceed the capacity of this link now. So we have to make up for that somehow. And we can make up for that by decreasing the capacity of someone who's richer than those flows, the solid flow, down a little bit. And that's allowed in their definition because we're not hurting someone poor, we're only hurting people who are richer. Therefore, this is going to end up, so we can say increase this to 2.1 and decrease this to 15.9, and that makes things fairer. Therefore, this was an unfair allocation. So questions on that reasoning? And I would say, so I think this type of definition of fairness is useful in other contexts, as I mentioned, but also kind of gives us an intuition of what we expect good congestion control to get us to. We expect it to get us to sort of the efficiency argument, right? That we saw that in the first case, right? And in the second case, we have these links that seem underutilized. The congestion control is going to try to utilize that full link. And we're going to arrive at this sort of min-max fairness where we're going to take bandwidth away, hopefully, from the richer flows when we can, but do it in a way where we don't just set everything equal, right? Because a fair allocation here would be to give everyone 1 megabyte a second. And that's not what we want to do. And we don't want to say that that's the right thing to do, even though it's kind of intuitively and obviously fair. So there's another fairness index, way of measuring fairness that doesn't really take into account these constraints, but is very common in the literature and in our textbook that I'll mention. and common numerical index that we'll see, you'll see sometimes when people talk about, you know, is this actually a fair allocation of the network? And basically the idea here is that if we have our share of a resource for user I is xi, then our, I should do that. Yay, okay. Xi, then we do this sum here. And this turns out to be 1 when everyone's equal, and 1 over n, if you give one flow everything and everyone else 0, and numbers in between. So this is a kind of a way of quantifying things. That idea doesn't work with min-max fairness, really, because, well, precisely because min-max fairness handle these cases where the best allocation is not even. And this doesn't really handle that as elegantly. Okay, so we talked about fairness, and part of the reason I talked about fairness is I'm going to talk about a case where the congestion control algorithms we've seen don't work out very fairly. And here I have a scenario where we're going to have 2 flows. I'm going to have 1 flow from here to here, and 1 flow from here to here. And we're going to say that this link is very long relative to the other links. And if it's long, that means it has a high latency. So we have our 2 flows like this. And it turns out that the scheme we've discussed actually doesn't work very well in this case. And that's even though, yes, it's something that we like actually used on the internet for a long time. And this is still actually a problem with what we use on the internet, maybe to a lesser extent, but still a problem. And to think about like what's going to go wrong here, and it's going to have something to do with this long link. So something to do with us having more latency on one of the connections than the other. And to think about that, let's say that we're going to have both 2 flows using the same bandwidth, but one uses a long link, so it has twice the round trip time. My question is, what window size do we have to make this happen? Give you a little time, you can check with your neighbor the calculation on that. What are the window sizes that these flows have? And the reason we're asking this is that our additive increase deals with window size, not bandwidth. So I'm going to think about how window size is affected, not bandwidth is affected. Someone volunteer to tell me, what's a good first step to solve this problem? Yeah.
So for flow 1, it's 50 milliseconds round trip time. So in turn, that means you have 20 round trips per second.
Okay.
And then you can calculate the window size by doing 500 divided by 20.
Okay, so you have 20 round trips per second, and your observation is that every round trip we're going to send a window of packets. That's what we expect to happen. Yeah, so our key insight here is that the window size is the amount we send per round trip in sort of our normal operation, right? Because our ideal window size was basically bandwidth times round trip time, right? Because we'd send the window, get the acknowledgement, and the round trip time was how long it took us to get the acknowledgement of the first thing we sent in that window. So, yeah, so ideally, sort of window size equals packets per round trip time, because we send a whole window in one round trip time, and then we get the ACK back after the round trip time that allows us to move the window forward and keep going. So our ideal scenario is that, and that says that, oh, if we have 20 round trips per second, this gives us 500 divided by 20, which is going to be 25. And if we do the same calculation for flow 2, well, our round trip time is twice as much. We're going to have 10 round trips per second. We're going to have twice the window size. So the numbers I get are window size 25 and window size 50. So that's what we expect the window size to be to achieve the same bandwidth for these two flows. So with a higher round trip time, we need a higher window size. And that makes sense because our window size was how many packets in flight. And if we have twice the latency, we need twice as much stuff pending. So where does this get us in trouble is that when I talked about additive increase, what did I talk about doing? I talked about adding one packet per round trip time. And there's two issues with this. So if I get advanced, so window size 25 here is 500 packets a second. Window size 26, what's that going to be? So it was 500 packets a second because you have 25 packets every 50 milliseconds. 26 is we're going to have 26 packets every 50 milliseconds. So that's going to give us 520 packets a second. Here, if I have window size 50, 1, if I increase it by 1, that's going to be 51 packets per 100 milliseconds, which is going to be 510 packets a second. So with the larger window size, increasing by 1 sort of increases our bandwidth by a smaller portion because we've, you know, to increase the bandwidth by 10%, we need to multiply the window size by 10%. We'd have 10% more packets in flight. It's going to be a smaller portion with the higher round trip time. Also, if we're increasing the window size by 1 for every round trip, we're doing it half as often. So what ends up happening is that we actually get that flow 2, sort of flow 2 additive increase is 1/4 as fast at increasing bandwidth. And it's 1/4 as fast, sort of half the increase per round trip time, and half the round trip times per second. So that adds up to 1/4 as fast as this additive increase. So questions on how I came up with that idea that like our higher round trip time flow is going way slower as far as its increase goes. And this disrupts an assumption we had earlier. And when we were doing our pictorial diagram, we assumed our additive increase gave us this nice 45 degree angle. And that 45 degree angle worked because the increase in bandwidth that both flows did over the same time period was the same. But we just learned that's not what happens. It's in fact going to be tilted, which means we're going to end up converging to less bandwidth. And this in fact does happen. If you have a bottleneck link that has higher round trip time and lower round trip time flows, then the higher round trip time connection is going to have less bandwidth in equilibrium. And so in the sense of bandwidth usage, in the sense of the definitions of fairness I've shown you so far, it's unfair. Now, some people would argue that maybe this is fine because if it has a higher round trip time, probably it's going through more switches and routers and maybe therefore it's using more network resources. But if we're considering fairness being you got the same bandwidth overall, it's not fair. So questions on sort of why this is going to give us different bandwidths. And something else you might notice about this is that I can kind of have my connection get more bandwidth than yours just by adjusting my additive increase factor. And I said that we kind of did this by accident when we changed our round trip time. But we can kind of do this more deliberately too. So we saw one example with Cubic, which deliberately adjusts the additive increase. So you might have a very good question of, is Cubic unfair with things that aren't Cubic? And the answer is yes. And you also might have the question of, well, if I want to get more bandwidth, can I get more bandwidth this way? Absolutely. And there's, in fact, an easier way to do it than adjusting your additive increase factor. So one thing you could do is you could like take your system, like I'm running Linux, I can open the Linux kernel code, find out where the additive increase code is, and mod it two times to it, right? I could do that. But there's an even easier solution that you can do to get more bandwidth. You can just use two connections. Because two connections are going to get twice the bandwidth. And our fairness is per connection. It's not per host. And those two connections collectively will add two, not one, per round trip time. They'll get twice the bandwidth. And that makes sense because we said it's fair between connections. We didn't say it's fair between hosts. And this also says that if you like are an ISP, like let's say you run UVA IT and you're concerned about someone hogging all the bandwidth on the Wi-Fi, from the Wi-Fi for the university. This tells you that the solutions you want are not congestion control solutions. Like, if you want to limit that, you're going to have to use some other style solutions. And we'll talk about some of them when we talk about managing switch queues, switch and router queues, which will be a topic we have after this. And also the subject of an assignment will be something called weighted fair queuing, where instead of relying on connections to self-regulate, we're going to make them lose packets based on, you know, what's fair at the switch side. Obviously, this violates the end-to-end principle, but if I'm an ISP, you know, where do I have control over the network? It's not the ends, it's the middle. Okay, and I mentioned the issue that, oh, you know, one way we can add more is we can do something that isn't normal TCP. And I mentioned that, oh, Cubic, which is not normal TCP, it doesn't do additive increase, it does this weird variable increase thing, is not normal TCP. And there's also a whole bunch of other variants that aren't normal TCP. And kind of this kind of historical thing that happens that affects people who want to modify TCP is that anytime you propose a new version of a new, you know, variant of TCP, if you want people to accept it, you need to tell them how does it interact with the old TCP. So people are really concerned about whether sort of new transport protocols, new ways of doing congestion control are so-called TCP friendly. Because on the internet, it's not good enough that your congestion control protocol kind of works with itself. It has to work with TCP. It has to work with how TCP increases its window, how TCP decreases its window, or else it's not acceptable to deploy. Because very few people have networks which only are going to run your new protocol. They're almost always going to be running your new protocol alongside some old TCP stuff. And this is so-called TCP friendliness. And you might think, okay, so that means it must be fair to TCP. And that would be a good intuition. That's usually not what people who publish papers in this area are looking at. Because there are, because the reason they're proposing a new congestion control algorithm is because TCP does poorly for certain types of connections. So for example, we mentioned that TCP, the sort of normal additive increase strategy, is real bad at realizing we have extra bandwidth with a high bandwidth network. We saw that we had this huge amount of time it would take to go from like 0.5 megabytes a second to 15. Like half a minute. And if they want to fix that, well, it's not going to be fair. It has to be unfair. But we want to prove that it's friendly in a certain sense, at least. So as examples, here are figures from, these figures are from the Cubic paper, where they compared how Cubic did, which is in red, is in black, to when running alongside normal TCP flows, which are in red. They label it TCP SAC because it's TCP with everything, all the standard stuff we talked about, and selective acknowledgments. And you can see they were pretty concerned about like documenting how does Cubic perform alongside. And their argument was that for low round trip times where TCP performs well, they're sharing the network well, and they hope that you don't care. And they argue that TCP performs poorly at high round trip times, so this is okay. Maybe you disagree. Because this looks like old TCP is not doing very well alongside new Cubic. And also they sort of show what happens with sort of lots of different connections. But this is kind of a thing you need to show in order to have anyone use your protocol, because they are concerned, is everyone out, all the old stuff on my network going to break? Because you absolutely can do that. And here we also have, this is giving sort of throughput at different packet loss rates. This is from a paper for a type of TCP called compound TCP, which used to be the default in Windows until like a decade ago. And you can see they have regular TCP is here, and compound TCP is the dashed line here, and the dotted line is the total throughput. They're showing that it actually uses the whole link and doesn't like leave bandwidth unused. But they're showing how it runs together, that it's not too unfair. And this sort of way of kind of just running a simulation, so these are either simulations or actual deployments, but this is kind of the state of the art to evaluate. So there, you can kind of do this mathematically, but the dynamics are really tricky to actually model like with as probability statistics. There are some results. So I talked about round trip times being unfair with normal TCP. So that people have kind of modeled analytically, and there's a formula for that where someone just figured out, okay, given the timings and doing some applied probability and statistics, which won't be a subject of this class because we'll talk about probability and statistics stuff, but not like proving things, which is like a whole area. But they found basically that, that unfairness with round trip time, basically, your throughput is inversely proportional to your round trip time. But as far as having a model like this for, you know, normal TCP versus like Cubic, that's a lot harder. I think there are papers that have tried to do that, but it's a lot harder. And usually what you see actually happen when people invent new congestion control is they just simulate it. Or ideally deploy it. There's also, I guess I would say, a history in people proposing congestion control mechanisms of the simulations not matching the reality for various reasons. More so with some things we'll talk about later where we don't use packet loss. And I mentioned some things about, you know, Cubic here looking pretty bad, and sort of recent results on this are that, you know, Cubic is kind of unfair. That if you run Cubic alongside sort of old standard TCP, it gets 70 to 80% of the throughput with the same number of connections. and just how it is. But as far as fairness goes, kind of the empirical results are that that kind of result I showed you with the diagram of two flows, that kind of actually does work in practice. That if you have flows with the same congestion control algorithm, be it normal TCP or multiple cubic flows or all these other variants, generally they achieve excellent fairness. So that fairness index I showed you earlier, that sort of sum of squares versus square of sums ratio, gets us very close to one in practice. You know, even with kind of the random things that happen on a real network. Okay, so that's my interlude into fairness. And where do I have? Thought I had slides on something that I, oh, I do, okay. Yeah, so let's talk about a few other kind of miscellaneous issues here. So one thing I highlighted here that we didn't talk about yet is this fast retransmit. So what is fast retransmit? And we've already seen fast retransmit. Fast retransmit is this idea that if we see duplicate X, we should immediately retransmit the next packet before we have a timeout. And this is very important for performance because generally our timeout is going to be set conservatively. And this is going to be how we're going to quickly discover we need to retransmit. And we're going to save a whole lot of time by not waiting for that timeout, which might be two or three times longer than it actually takes, because we have to have extra space in the timeout in case the network is suddenly slow right now, but not later. And TCP has the heuristic that after three duplicate acts, they retransmit. They don't do one because they want to handle some random reordering by the network hardware. That when we have routers and switches, sometimes the queues don't say exactly in order, and we want to make that not cause us to send lots of extra traffic. So this idea is pretty intuitive. I mean, at least we covered it before, maybe it's not intuitive. We covered it before and it's easy. But what's not easy is how this interacts with the congestion window. And when Campbell introduced this, we talked about the idea that the window size is about the packets in flight, but that only really worked when we didn't have losses. And here we have losses. And there's a problem that when we're doing this retransmission, our window size and our packets in flight now disagree. And TCP has a fix for this called fast recovery. So to explain fast recovery, let's first explain why does the window size disagree? Why is it the case that our window size no longer matches how much stuff we have on the network? And if it no longer matches, that means if our window size is optimal for no losses, it's wrong for this case where we have a packet loss, that we're not using as much of the network as we think we should be. And kind of the key intuition here is that the normal operation of TCP is what's known as self-clocking. And it's self-clocking because we learn that packets go out of the network from an ACK, and each ACK makes us send one new packet, so that keeps the number of packets in flight constant. That we always have an ACK or a data packet in flight for each slot in our window. So if our window size is 6, we have 6 packets in flight, either 6 data packets or 6 ACK packets, or a combination, like 3 data packets and 3 ACK packets for the other reactor, right? Because we sent 6 data packets, and each of them, one by one, turned into an ACK. So as this process happens, we always have 6 packets across the network, and when we receive one of those ACKs, we send the next data packet when there's no losses. So we maintain this idea that we always have 6 packets, or window size, in flight. And this is what we want for congestion control, because we want to keep the network sort of load steady. But when we have duplicate acts, that means that we are losing stuff on the network, that we have acts and we don't send something in response. So the load on the network is going down, and it's going down even if we have an adjuster or window size. Now, here in this picture, I'm kind of, this chart, I'm assuming we don't adjust our window size, but obviously we are going to also adjust our window size because there's a packet loss. But even accounting for that packet loss, you know, we're not keeping window size packets in flight, we're losing packets. And if we just retransmit normally, we're going to have this time when the amount of stuff we sent over the network is not what our window size says we should be sending. So, and I guess kind of the observation is that even though I don't know which packets got there from these acts, I know that some did, that there's capacity on the network for three more packets, is what my impression is from these acts. So what we do with fast retransmission and fast recovery, let's just say, is we're going to do our window size adjustment for the congestion control. So we do our multiplicative decrease. But we're going to do this additional adjustment to compensate for us temporarily underloading the network. That normally when we have one of these packet losses, you know, we haven't transmitted stuff on the network for a while because we haven't sent any new packets. So it's under our window size number of packets in flight. So we're going to compensate for that by temporarily adjusting our window size upwards a little bit for each duplicate act, because that indicates that there's a packet that I haven't sent and there's room on the network for an extra packet. And this is a temporary adjustment because once we know that we have started, actually we've gotten back to normal and we don't have these missing packets anymore, we're going to reset our window size back down to what it was before. So this is a temporary adjustment just to account for the fact that the number of packets in flight doesn't equal the window size anymore because we had the loss. Once we've finished dealing with the loss and we're back to normal, you know, we're sending, getting acknowledgments for new packets, then we're going to go back down to the old window size, where the old window size is the one after the multiplicative decrease. So this is something that TCP implementations do to speed up this process when we have a duplicate act, because otherwise we basically not only slow down the connection from the halving of the window size, but we slow it down even more. And that's pretty bad, especially when our window size is kind of small in terms of number of packets. And so what that kind of looks like is that I'll have my retransmission, and then I will say, okay, I'm going to temporarily increase my window size to account for those two duplicate acts, because I want to send at least that much stuff on the network. So on. So here is this is sort of missing sort of having a window size, having before addition. But we'd have that if we were doing this more properly. But basically the idea is we're going to sort of have this temporary adjustment upwards in order to account for our missing load on the network to keep it equal to our window size. Okay, yeah.
So when after this would the window size go back down?
When would the window size go back down?
It's just showing that it goes up temporarily, but then it keeps going up temporarily. And
so it should go down when we receive Act 2.
Okay. Like when the missing one, okay.
Basically. Or we receive any Act of 8 or 9. You know, Act 2 or anything later. Yeah. And what I'm not showing here is that really this is going to be like 3 plus 2, not 6 plus 2. Because I'm showing this separately from our halving with multiplicative decrease. So this is going to be combined with multiplicative decrease. But combining it makes this slide a little less clear because that's two different things going on kind of with it, next to each other. Other questions? Okay. So let's go to one of the other things from the Jacobson paper, which is called slow start. And this, I would say, is not very well named. So the name slow start comes from what happened in early versions of TCP before they had this slow start idea. They basically started with a pretty large window size. And when that was higher than the capacity of the network, that worked very badly. It just was horrible. So slow start's a fix for that idea. I'm going to have slow start always in quotes because slow start isn't very slow. It's in fact a pretty fast start. It just doesn't start with a high number, but it's fast. I wrote this slide wrong. Sorry, I should write my slides better. Wow, that is a... because this is very inaccurate and I don't know how I didn't catch that. So we start with a window size of one packet. That is right. Okay, we increase by one packet for each ACK. Right, and this means that we double for each RTT. So this is right. But this is exponential increase. So we start with one. In the first round trip time, we increase by one. In the second round trip time, we increase by two. Third round trip time, we increase by four. Because it goes 1, 2, 4, 8. Each round trip time, our window size is exponentially increasing. So this is how we start connections. And the idea here is we want to very quickly get to the point where we start getting packet loss. And that's around where our steady state should be. But they knew back then that, you know, if we just do our normal additive increase thing, it's going to take forever for us to get to the full bandwidth. So to avoid that, we do this exponential increase that they call slow start. It's a bad name because it's exponential. It's not slow. It's very fast. And we do that until we get a loss, and then we go back to our normal steady state stuff, our additive increase. And I have a picture. Yes. So, as an example, here is a diagram of sequence numbers. We have ACKs and data sends. So you can see our slow start behavior is in 1, 2, 4, 8, 12, and then we have a loss, and then things kind of reset. I should show this version. That was without fast retransmit. This is with fast retransmit. So you can see our starting behavior is that we do this sort of fast probing to find out, to quickly increase our window size starting at one. Yeah?
Isn't there potential for more unfairness here? Like, if we're both using my strategy, but we start a connection at the same time, but I make mine start even faster, like I make it cubic, then wouldn't I be able to gobble up all the window size right away?
Isn't there a potential for more unfairness? So this is not very fair. The reason why this is okay is that this is until the first packet loss. So once there's any packet loss, we just get out of this mode. But indeed, this means that if you have a whole bunch of connections starting, they're probably not going to use the network very fairly. Because that kind of makes intuitive sense, because if we're just starting a connection, we haven't had long enough to react to any congestion events. We're just going to use as much bandwidth as we can, basically. So this is the slow start idea. And as I've sort of here, it seems like, okay, we only do this when we're starting the connection. That's not, we're also going to actually do this later. And to handle that, we're going to store the location where we had our loss. And this is called, in the TCP documentation, SSThresh. That name probably is because that's probably literally the variable name in the C code that first implemented it. And whenever our window size is below SSThresh, we use slow start. And we set the window size to SSThresh after every multiplicative decrease. And reading this slide, you might say, wait a moment. So don't we have a multiplicative decrease after the first packet loss? And don't we have a multiplicative decrease in our steady state? No, then. So how could we get below SSThresh? Because the only way we've learned about the window size going down is this multiplicative decrease. What's the point of this variable? How could we get lower than it if it seems like we're resetting it every time we get lower? And the answer is that when I said we do multiplicative decrease, I didn't give you the whole picture. That we usually do multiplicative decrease, but there's an exception. And an exception that only makes sense when we have slow start. And that exception is that on timeouts, we're going to reset the window size back to 1. On duplicate acts, which is going to be our common case, we're going to do our multiplicative decrease. But on a timeout, we're going to assume something much worse is happening. And kind of the intuition is we want to kind of reprobe the network to figure out what the bandwidth is, because it's pretty bad when there's an actual timeout and not a duplicate act. And that means after a timeout, we'll use slow start up until we get to the last bandwidth that worked. And that then we'll revert back to our steady state. And remember, slow start is not really slow. So this is not going to have a big performance impact in the case where we don't need to readjust to a new bandwidth, because we're going to pretty quickly get there. Okay. Questions? About our non-multiplicative decrease and this slow start idea, so this exponential increase. So let's do let's say we're using slow start, and I have a connection from A to B, but it's bidirectional, and this happens, how long does it take? So I'll give you some time to work that out for their neighbor that you agree. Question, are we seeing both are starting at window size 1? Yes, please. Of one packet. And I'm going to neglect the time to transmit each packet, even though that probably does matter. So we're just going to assume, like, the transmission time of packets is negligible for this problem. Question or answer?
I do have a question.
Yeah.
So when B sends the acknowledgement back to A, does it set its own, reset its own window size, or does B's window size remain 1?
Question, when B sends the acknowledgement to A, does it reset its own window size, or window size 1? So in each direction of the connection, we're going to have an independently managed window size, and that's going to be adjusted based on what acknowledgements we do and don't get for us sending. So, like, I've mostly talked about congestion control as if it's one direction, but the way it works in two directions is basically we run the one direction idea, but just twice. Yeah. Question or?
Then it would be like 8 run trips, right?
So you got 8 run trips. How do you get that? Or?
So, first run trip is just A sent to B the first packet, and then A sent.
Okay.
And then it's 2, 3, and then it's 4. And after that, starting at the fifth round trip, it's B sending the first one, the first packet, and then 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8. And then finally, it's A send the one packet to B.
And then B to A, we have 1, then 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then 8, yeah. So we have 3 round trip times for this process here, plus a little extra for the transmission time, because sending 2 packets is probably going to be a little longer than, and receiving 2 acts is going to be a little longer than 1 round trip. Then we have 4 round trip times for sending 8 packets from B, because we send 1, then we send 2, 3, then we send 4, 5, 6, 7, then we send 8. Plus a little extra for the transmission time because sending 4, 5, 6, 7 takes a little, and receiving the acts takes a little bit longer than one run trip time. And then we have A to B packet 5. That's another. So that's another round trip time, assuming we wait for the final act. So this gives us about 8 round trip times. Questions on how I came up with that answer? And I guess I would also say in about 7.5 round trip times until B gets A's last packet. Yeah. Is your question how I got the 7.5 versus from the 8?
No, I'm saying, like, shall we just minus 1 since B get the first 4 packets from A? Then have to wait for A to get A to get A, being the stars, then A.
Sorry. I have an off by 1 error here. So, yes, this is your point is that here, is that when B sends this to A, B can also simultaneously send, when B receives this 4 from A, B can simultaneously, that these happen at the same time. So this should actually be 7.5 round trips because those overlap. These happen at the same time. That B sends its acknowledgement. So it sends ACK 4 plus these are at the same time. So B acknowledges A's fourth packet at the same time it sends its first packet. And so I was off by half a round trip time because of that. You are correct. Thank you for pointing that out. So people look confused about this. So the timeline I'm going for is that we have A goes to B, sends data 4. And what B can do in response is B sends ACK 4 and B's data, this is A's data, 1 at the same time. And the picture I had originally, I said that B would wait to send that an extra half of the round trip time, but that's not what actually is going to happen. Does that make questions on that? And now I need to figure out where I was.
Next time, when an A is transitioning to sending.
Oh, yes. Doesn't this also happen later? Yes. So I'm off by more than that. So here we have B to A, 8, A to B. So this is 3 round trips and 3.5 round trips. And then A to B, ACK 8, comma 5, and this is sort of 1 round trip. So yeah, we're actually at 7 round trip times when we account for this properly. So yeah, so I was being poor in, so the key thing to keep in mind that I wasn't careful about is that we can start sending, we receive the packet when we send the acknowledgement, not when the other sides receive the acknowledgement. So we can send our response to that right when we're sending that acknowledgement. And yes, I missed that when I was constructing this exercise, but it's a very good point. Okay, so we have our, so that's where we'll leave up off the slow start. We'll have some other miscellaneous congestion control topics next time. And after we finish up sort of miscellaneous things on congestion control, we'll talk about queue management. So kind of contrasting with congestion control, things we can do at routers to adjust how much bandwidth people get and fairness between flows. Before I leave off here, we saw this diagram before. Here's our slow start. This is the, so this gray line here is the window size. That's our slow start. And this dotted line here, that's the slow start threshold. So you can see the slow start threshold gets adjusted downwards each time we have a multiplicative decrease that takes it low. We just adjusted up or down each time there's a multiplicative decrease. And yeah, and you can see why I don't like the name slow start. So that's not slow, that window size increase. Okay, so that's where I'll leave off today. I'll see you all next week.